Sex as a reward. Every method of manipulation is based on the carrot and stick principle, whose applicability depends to a large extent on the ratio of physical strength possessed by the trainer and trainee. When dealing with the young, the carrot is favored as a means of control. It has the advantage of maintaining children's trust in adults, so that even at a later date, they will bring their problems to their parents, and so the process of manipulation is continued. This is much more effective than to start with the stick. If a captive dolphin has learned to do a trick well, its trainer throws it a fish. Because the dolphin wants to eat, it will do whatever is asked of it. Man, however, since he earns money, is quite capable of providing his own food. It would be impossible to bribe him in this way. He would, in fact, be above bribery altogether were it not for one basic male need, which has to be satisfied, the need for physical contact with a woman's body. This need is so strong, and its fulfillment gives man such intense pleasure, that one suspects it may be the prime reason for his voluntary enslavement to woman. His longing for subjection may even be a facet of his sexual makeup. The basis of any economy is a system of barter. Therefore, someone demanding a service must be able to offer something of equal value in exchange for it. But as a man must fulfill his sexual desires, and since he wants to possess exclusive rights over one vagina, the prices have risen to an extortionate level. This has made it possible for women to follow a system of exploitation which puts the most exploitative robber barons to shame, and no man remains exempt. The concept of femininity is essentially sociological, not biological. Even a homosexual is unlikely to escape without paying his dues. The partner whose sexual drive is less developed quickly discovers the weak points of the other, whose drive is more intense, and manipulates him accordingly. It will always be the woman, or the female partner, in any homosexual relationship who exploits the man, for to be a female means to be undersexed. Just as woman denies herself any depth of emotion, she denies herself a sexual appetite. How else can a young girl tell her boyfriend she loves him but refuse him her body? Thanks to her mother's advice, a girl will suppress her desires even in puberty for the sake of the capital to be gained later. In earlier societies, a bride had to be a virgin to be worth anything. And even today, a girl who has little sexual experience will have a higher market value than one who has had a number of lovers. Chastity in a man, on the other hand, has never been worth much. As women do not really care for men, they are not much interested in their chastity. For this reason, a boy can never be raped by an older woman, only seduced. But let a man play that game with an adolescent girl, he will be lynched as a sex criminal by a female mob. A man could, of course, condition his sexual needs as easily as a woman, provided his training started at a very early age. Sufficient proofs of this are the monks, the majority of whom survive without sexual satisfaction. Nobody will seriously maintain that they are all eunuchs. But instead of learning to suppress his needs, a man will allow them to be encouraged whenever possible, by women, of course, since their interests are mainly directed towards man's libido. Man is never dressed in such a way as to awaken sexual desire in the opposite sex, but it is very much to the contrary with woman. By the age of 12, she is already disguised as bait. The curves of breast and hip are exaggerated by tight-fitting clothes, and the length of leg and shape of calf and ankle are enhanced by transparent stockings. Her lips and eyes beckon, moist with makeup, her hair with gleaming tints. And to what purpose, if not to stimulate the male to ever-increasing, everlasting sexual desire? She will offer her wares like goods in a shop window, apparently so near and at a price so easily obtained. No wonder men think there is no greater happiness than to make enough money to pay for such tempting merchandise. Lacking money, or at least lacking the prospect of it, a man will have to do without a woman, and consequently without sex. Nevertheless, the relationship between the sexes involves a credit system. That is, women are prepared under certain circumstances, while the husband is still training for his profession, to earn their own money, more or less as a loan against future earnings, and to place their bodies at his disposal. In this case, the interest rates are proportionately high. The profession for which the man is preparing during this time must promise an income lucrative enough to make the woman's investment worthwhile. In general, it is axiomatic that a woman will be expensive in direct proportion to the attractiveness of her secondary sex characteristics. Hence, if one man meets another with an especially attractive wife, instead of being depressed, he should consider how much money the woman is liable to be costing her husband. It would be more economical for a man to satisfy his sexual needs with a prostitute instead of rushing into marriage. Prostitute, in the conventional sense, strictly speaking, most women belong in this group. But here again, a man will behave by conditioned reflex. Sex that does not cost much is considered correspondingly inferior. His pleasure varies according to the cost of the woman he sleeps with. And if he cannot get the desired woman any other way, or if there is no other way to keep her, he offers the highest bid and takes her to City Hall. For this reason, women calmly tolerate the professional prostitute. Why should they mind when they never feel jealousy as a man does? They may well feign jealousy, occasionally, of course, just to flatter him. They don't mind the institution of brothels either. Their attitude toward extramarital affairs is exactly the same, unless, of course, they become too obvious, in which case they tend to forgive them. How few women would leave an unfaithful husband, and how few men would stay with a woman in the same circumstances. Wives will often even welcome a philandering husband, for there are so many advantages arising from his gratitude for her tolerance and forgiveness. Obviously, women would prefer to be able to control extramarital affairs. This explains why the wife-swapping parties and pluralist sex practices are gaining favor, for they tend to neutralize the sexual fantasies of husbands and men friends. Moreover, these kinds of sexual release are free, whereas professional prostitution absorbs money which should be put into housekeeping. As the group of people is usually well acquainted, the rules of hygiene can be imposed and there is less danger of venereal disease, which a man might catch if he visits an anonymous brothel. And this is one of woman's main worries as far as a husband's sexual adventures are concerned. It is ironic that men consider ordinary prostitutes so very contemptible. They are among the few women who frankly admit that they make money by renting out a specific orifice of their bodies. The female callings of prostitute, actress, model, singer, dancer are not practiced by men. But whereas actresses, singers, dancers, and models work with nets being the men who catch them when they don't feel like working anymore, a prostitute has no such recourse. When she is tired or ill, there is no one there, waiting hopefully for the time when he will be allowed to support her. No man in our society would allow a prostitute to exploit him as a fashion model, for instance, could. Women, too, despise the common prostitute, but for a different reason. They despise her for her stupidity. A woman who sells her body so ineptly is shockingly stupid by female intelligence standards. They admire only such women as are able to exact an exorbitant price for their favors. For example, those who marry Rothschilds, Aga Khans, or Rockefellers. They have impressed on men the concept that prostitution is a sordid profession to intimidate men who otherwise might one day be able to draw parallels. The basic principle of sex as a reward does not vary from woman to woman. They all offer themselves to a man, stress their charms, and then, providing he has performed his tricks satisfactorily, reward him. And since they never cease to keep him in a state of sexual excitement, he will demand the reward again and again. It is only men with reduced sexual potency who can afford to make do with sporadic affairs and live the life of a hippie year after year without feeling the need of a regular reward. One of the results of this female system of sex rewards is that a man with strong sexual needs must be more obedient to women than others. Look at the advertisements for dynamic, enterprising, energetic, enthusiastic young men, so much in demand in business. What are such men, in fact, but sexually dependent psychopaths who have set their standards in women too high? Why else would a man use all his energy and imagination to sell a particular commercial product? Only for this reward. The whole world outside his office window beckons him with the promise of adventure, yet so strong is his sex drive that he gladly forgoes all that is there and instead buys himself a woman with his hard-earned money. But even if he calls her his adventure, she will never be a substitute for what he has lost. When and if he meets her, everything will follow the strict system of supply and demand with its rigid rules and almost total lack of surprise. The old saying that a woman's fate is her body is true insofar as fate has a positive meaning. But in the negative sense, it is better applied to men. After all, a woman profits from her anatomical peculiarities whenever she can, while a man is an eternal slave to his. The male erection is so grotesque to a woman that the first time she experiences it, she can hardly believe her eyes. However, when she realizes that it can be produced by the slightest provocation, not necessarily even a naked woman, a film or a photograph might do, she will still not get over her amazement. It is, after all, a reflex action, rather like hitting someone on the knee. Probably no theory evolved by man is as absurd as Freud's theory of penis envy. To a woman, the penis and scrotum seem superfluous to man's otherwise neatly constructed body. They are almost untidy. She cannot understand that after use, the penis is not retractable like an aerial on a portable radio. And as for envy, it would never occur, even to a little girl. Not in her deepest unconscious would she wish to possess a penis. And as to being at a disadvantage compared to a little boy, that is nonsense, for she gets preferential treatment anyway. Freud was merely the victim of training by woman's self-abasement techniques, thanks to his mother, wife, and probably his daughters as well. He confused cause and effect. A woman only says she is worth less than a man. She doesn't really think it. If anyone ought to feel a sense of envy, it is men. They should be jealous of women's power, but of course they never are, for they glory in their powerlessness.